This interview is being conducted on Wednesday, July 21st, 2010, with Mr. Ray Isaac at the Indian Prairie Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Isaac was born on May 19, 1930, in Chicago, Illinois. He is a retired Chicago police officer and learned of the Veterans History Project from a friend and fellow retired officer. Also with us today is Mr. Ray Gustafson, who is also interested in this project. Mr. Isaac has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project. Here is his story. So, Ray, where were you living just before you went into the military? What was your life like? What were you doing?
I lived in Chicago, Illinois. I went to Lane Tech High School. My father, after he came home from a regular job, had a little push cart in front of Riverview Park, which we lived approximately a block and a half from Riverview. And after getting out of high school for the day, I'd go home and I'd prepare a little hot dog cart for him, cut the buns, put the hot dogs in to get the steamer going. And he would come home and lay down for about an hour and a half. My mother would be chopping the onions and getting the relish and the mustard ready. And in fact, we got the whole wagon ready, and he'd come home and get up after about an hour. He'd take the cart and push it a block and a half to Riverview Park, and we were outside of the main gate, which would be south of the main gate, was my dad's stand, and my uncle had north of the main gate with a push cart.
Okay.
And that lasted 25 years, I believe up until 1950, where they built an overpass over Belmont and Western, and then the park sort of died out.
Right.
And after that, being with my two other friends, and my brother joining the Air Force, my one brother, and my other brother, who joined the Navy, nobody was home but myself.
Okay.
So I was out one evening with my two friends. I said, Ray, what do we say we join the service? What do you want to do? Let's become paratroopers. So that's how we decided. We all enlisted for 3 years.
So you enlisted?
I enlisted in the service.
And what was it about being paratroopers that appealed to you?
We saw a couple come to Riverview Park one night, the three of us. And they dressed so nice. They had the big boots on, and their pants were pulled up. And they just looked a little better than the average serviceman, you know?
So how old were you at this point?
At that point, I was about 18 and a half, maybe 19.
18 or 19? So yeah. Like 1948,
1949? 1948. I was 18 years old.
Okay.
I was 18 in May. And then in July, I joined service with my two other buddies. We all went together, and we all stayed together.
Okay.
No matter where we went.
You all managed to keep together as a group.
Even in the same plane.
Wow.
We jumped out of, and our same barracks. And we all made the same rank. We were all tech sergeants.
Okay. So how did your family react when you
My mom didn't want me to go because I was the only child left at home.
Right.
But later on, while I was in the service, I didn't realize this. My mother came pregnant. I had a little sister, 15 years younger. But at the time, no, she didn't want me to go. She said, you have two brothers in the service, and if something happens to them, what are you going to do? I said, oh, take it easy, Mom. My dad says, go in there, fight for your country. Because my dad's meal coach, you know, he figured. So that's what made me go along with it, plus the fact I had my two buddies with me, you know.
Right.
And that made it a little easier to be away from home and so forth.
Where were you inducted?
I was inducted in Chicago, but I ended up, the first camp I went to was in Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay.
And it was the headquarters for the 3rd Armored Division. And that's where I took my basic training.
Okay. When you were inducted, what do you remember of that day? What was it like?
Kind of scary.
Well, tell us about it.
We walked in and got off the buses that they picked us up in. And they took us to the camp. And it was a processing center. And you got in line. And the first thing they did was take your shirt off, and they gave you the shots, one in each arm. And I said to myself, what am I getting into? And then they give you the clothes, just like the movies. They just pack it. What size are you? Take a medium, take a large. And, you know, then you walked in, you were assigned a barracks, and when the three of us go in there, and we're looking at each other, says, is this it? And I was really, I was somewhat scared.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, excited that I'm going to be there, you know. But that we got over that eventually, you know.
What was your barracks like?
The barracks were all wooden. Everybody slept outside of the main rooms in the back. The rooms in the back were for the sergeants.
Okay.
On that floor. And it was wide open. There were like 15 or 16 beds.
Were they bunk beds or were they single beds?
No, strictly single beds, and the front was a locker, foot locker. And when you had to arrange your clothes, your socks, your t-shirt, whatever you wore, certain places in that foot locker. And then you had to make your bed as tight as you could because the sergeant would come over and drop a quarter. And if it didn't bounce, he'd make you make the bed over again.
Did he inspect your foot lockers?
Oh, yeah. They open them up. You open that up automatically when he says, inspection, open up. And you open up and you look at it. You take the top drawer off, move it over to see where your other clothes were, you know. Then he put it back and he tell the guy, mark it down, whatever.
What happened if things were not in order?
Well, then he could give you what they call a gig. And I really never found out what the gig meant because I didn't get many of them, you know.
Uh-huh.
I thought maybe that meant you're not going to graduate from here or something. I didn't realize that, you know. So then it was nice. We'd get up in the morning. We'd run around the camp a little bit, about a mile. And then we'd go to a consolidated mess hall.
Okay.
And when this truck would pull up and the sergeant would say, okay, guys, get into the truck. We'd get into the truck, and it was always a guy in there that had been at the consolidated mess hall. And he'd say, we're going to a consolidated mess hall, and that's where you're going to cook and clean. And for some reason or another, some guy said, I'm getting out of here. And six of us jumped out of the back of the truck, and we just walked around the post until about 3-4 hours later, and we came back to our barracks, and nobody ever said anything. But so we got out of the detail. That's what we did. Unbeknownst to us, you know.
So it was to go eat, but also to cook and clean everything.
Yeah, cook and clean. And then we didn't even get to eat because we got out of the truck.
Because you went at the mess hall.
So the next morning, we stayed on the truck.
Was that the first day that you did it?
The first day. The second day, we got on the trucks again, and we went there, and we were assigned duties like handing out bread and soup and eggs, what have you. And then after that, we'd be assigned to the kitchen, KP duty. Mm-hmm. And we'd wash the plates and then start peeling some potatoes like you normally do, you know, 250-gallon drums. And that was it. And then they take it back to your barracks.
Yeah. Okay. And how long did that consolidated mess hall take?
That lasted 12 weeks. Every morning.
Okay. Every morning.
Every morning we'd go there. That was part of it. Our unit had the responsibility.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it after a while. It was fun. But you guys got to meet other people. And they come in line, you ask them, where are you from? Chicago. Oh, so am I, you know. And it made it nice. It's like a family.
You got to know people a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what happened after you were done with your consolidated duty for the day?
Well, we came back to the barracks, and it was sort of just take it easy. Nothing. We go into a rec room we had right by the mess hall. And they had a mess hall built there, a little one. And we go to play pool or go into a commissary down the street. Function and handle many other units around it. Mm-hmm. We buy a little bracelet or something, and ID tags and books and what have you, and it was nice. Very
did
nice.
You have any exercise? Did you have any classes?
No, the only exercise, no classes. The only exercise we had was a running 1 mile in the morning.
Okay.
As a group from our particular barracks. Coming back, no classes whatsoever.
So this was just your induction?
Basic training, and whatever training you got as a group when you got, well, you should, I should say, when you got out of the mess hall, went back to the barracks, it was 1 hour, and then you go out into the area proper where the barracks
right.
are, and you sit down in the grass, and the instructor would give you classes on self-protection and how to handle the gas mask and so forth.
Okay.
Because we did take training with gas masks.
Okay, and what was your gas mask training like?
Well, you get into a room, and they put the gas on,
mm-hmm.
and you put the gas mask on. And you take it off, they tell you can hear a loudspeaker, take your gas mask, and then you get somewhat asphyxiated, and you go out the door real quick.
Just
that
so
was
you
to let
know
you
what
know
it like.
What it's like. We did a little, not too much of target training.
Okay.
It was about maybe 1 day a week or a half a day during the week. We go out to the range,
mm-hmm.
and it was an M1 rifle, and the targets were, I don't know how many feet down, and where the target was, there was a pit. In the ground, and that's where two uniformed men would be down there pulling targets. After the shots are done, the target goes up, you mark it, you know.
Right.
With a bullseye or whatever, and that's transmitted back to your sergeant in back of you. And he'll tell you, good shot, good group
mm-hmm.
shots. We did that about 1 day at least a week, maybe a half a day.
Were you a good shot?
I thought I was pretty good. I didn't get it in the black, but I got a little rounded, you know.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes guys shoot 8 rounds and couldn't find the bullets. Not the target looked just like it was. But then they bring it back to you, and you can see where, you know, you had a group, decent group of shots. And
had you shot a gun before?
No, never. Not until I got
so
into the service.
So this was a new experience for you?
Very much so.
And
the kick of the weapon itself to your shoulder,
uh-huh.
You know, you think you're handling nothing, but it's got a kick.
It's got a kick, all right.
What weapon was it?
It's an M1. And it took a cartridge of 10. You know, you just push it in and it would feed it, you know, as you shoot. It was a good weapon.
So you would take 10 shots and then?
10 shots and then they pull the targets back and you'll do 20 a day. That's what you do, 20.
Okay.
Because you get to see what you're like, and then that target is thrown away and they put up another one for you. And you get 10 more. Then another group would come in, they'd lay down and do the same thing, you know.
Okay.
But you received a score,
uh-huh.
You know, a passing grade, let's put it that way.
So it was like a pass-fail
yeah,
kind of thing.
Right. But everybody passes, you know. If you don't, the instructor, he'll lay down on the ground next to you and tell you how to hold it, how to sight it.
Right.
And you improve.
So you learned how to deal with gas. You learned how to shoot. What else did you learn?
Well, marching, everywhere you go, you march.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal. It's pretty good. You sort of, you're all listening. It's real. And you chant as you march,
cadence,
you
right.
know, cadence. And it was nice. And you go around the camp a little bit. You come back. And
how much of a march would you do?
I think we do at least, I would say, maybe a mile and a half.
Okay.
That was pretty good. At a nice pace. You know, just
mm-hmm.
no backpacks, nothing. Just strictly your fatigues.
Mm-hmm.
And your cadence, and it was interesting how, you know.
Okay.
I think that time I weighed 146 pounds.
Okay.
And that's about it for the training over I can remember, you know. I can say it was 12 weeks.
12 weeks, and what happened at the end of the 12?
After the end of 12 weeks, we volunteered for administrative school, clerical school,
okay.
Typing. And we were shipped out to Camp Lee, Virginia, which was right outside of what the heck's that town? I can't think of the town. I'm trying to think. Roanoke is the closest I can think of.
Okay.
Roanoke. And we attended the administrative school and was strictly learning how to type.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a 12-week course also. And we get up in the morning, eat breakfast in a mess hall that was right where we were. It wasn't a consolidated mess.
Okay.
It was the actual mess hall for us in that group.
Okay.
We ate, and then we walked. We marched to music, which was speakers on the road that you went to go to the school.
Uh-huh.
And it would be continuous all day to music, and you'd march to the music to get to that typing school, the administrative school.
Okay, now why did you pick typing school?
Norfolk, Virginia. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Norfolk.
Why did you pick typing school?
I don't know why. They offered it. The 11th Airborne that we signed up for was in Japan. We figured we had plenty of time because we had to go to jump school
right in
Georgia. But we just, let's fill our time up. Let's go to typing school. We all went to the school, all three of us went to the
you
typing
and your
school.
Two buddies.
And we became typists. And it helped me later on when I came out of the police department,
right.
Doing reports and so forth. So we went to that.
How long was typing school?
Typing school was 12 weeks.
12 weeks.
Oh, yeah, 12 weeks. And then when you get to a point where you type, the officer will sit next to you, a lieutenant, and he'll say, okay, go ahead and type. And then he'll grade you, take the mistakes off, and tell you whether you're qualified or not. But one thing happened. We went out one night to town, to Norfolk. Now, we're from the north.
Right.
We get on a bus, we go to the back of the bus like we do in Chicago, put our feet up and talk and laugh. And we just told a guy we want to go to something. There was a beer place
Where
the GIs went. So we're in the back of the bus, and the bus driver didn't go. And my buddy said, come on, let's go. He turned around, he said, I'm not going until you get up to the front of the bus. Can you read the sign? And if you looked up, it said,
right.
Blacks.
Right. It was a segregated busing.
And being from the north, and my buddies said, we're not going to move. He got off the bus, the driver, and two policemen came on.
Wow.
You old boy better move.
Yeah.
So we got up and moved. I never was exposed to that.
Right.
In all my life. I never knew anything existed like that.
Yeah.
So then we finished a typing course, and at the Fort Lee.
Right.
We went there, and they assigned us to Fort Benning, Georgia. That was a paratrooper training camp.
Okay.
For any paratroopers. So we went to Fort Benning.
How did you get to Fort Benning, by the way?
They took us in we went on a train.
Okay,
to Fort Benning.
And was after, it a troop train, or was it just...
Just a regular train.
Regular train.
And, but the cars were set aside for GIs.
Okay.
So we got on the train, and I don't know how long it took us to get there. When we got there, a bus came to the state, put us all on a bus, and took us to the training camp itself, which was right outside of, I'm trying to think of, Columbus, Georgia, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It was Fort Benning, Columbus, Georgia, right. And then there we received the orientation session, and you know how it is to become a paratrooper and all this and that. And the next morning we started our training. The first thing they did in the morning, we had a mess hall in our area just for our group. We had breakfast, and then we ran 3 miles, which was around the airport. We ran 3 miles, came in, relaxed, and then we started our training as to getting out, jumping out of a plane door. Everything was a mock setup. The way to get to the door, how to put your hands on there, and how to go, and everything was a tap to your left leg, your calf. Not your calf, but your thigh area here.
Because you couldn't hear.
They hit, yeah, right. And then you're like a machine, a robot. You did everything like that, and then you did calisthenics. You did so many things, and that training card I gave you, that
right,
you had to pass that. And then, like I say, everything...
Tell us about the training card.
Oh, that was... You get a group, and he'd say, okay, next group, get up. And he'd time you for timing running. You'd run up, run back, run up, run back, and he'd grade you. And then you'd do squat jumps and this and push-ups and pull-ups.
And you had to be able to do so many.
You had to qualify physically. Otherwise, you were gone.
So
we took the training, everything like mock. And you got in there, it was just like the house of a plane. And you stand in the door and he'd tap you. And the other part, there was one part where they had a 45-foot tower. You got up the steps, you walked up there to the tower, you had a harness on, just a harness, mm-hmm. and you'd hook up to a cable. And he'd tell you to stand in the door, and he'd tap you, and you go out the door and present yourself with what they call a parachute landing type position.
Right.
And all of a sudden, on the back of your pack, on the back of your straps, the strap went like this.
It was like a zigzag.
Yeah. And when you jumped out, that thing unraveled. And as it unraveled, your body came down and you got the jerk because you're on a cable.
So how long did you do the simulation on the ground before
every
you got
day.
To that?
Every day.
Even after you got onto the tower?
Even before the tower, you did all this mock stuff.
Right. And how long did you do that mock stuff? Was it like a...
Every day. Oh, I would say maybe 2.5-3 hours.
Okay,
you did a lot of
3 hours for how long? A week, 2 weeks?
No,
weeks?
For the entire course.
The whole time?
12 weeks, yeah.
12 weeks, even after you were jumping off the
even
tower?
Even after you jumped off the tower.
Okay.
So, like I say, you jump off the tower and you hook, with a cable you hooked on, it brought you down. It took you all the way down, maybe 150 feet to a little mound. And they unhook you and you go there and the sergeant is in a chair and it's tilted and you salute him and he gives you a grade. Very good, soldier.
How did you feel that first time you jumped off the
Exciting.
Tower?
Exciting. I said, this is great. Just like Riverview Park with the parachutes. But anyway, we had a guy in our group. His name was Parisi. I'll never forget it. He got in a tower, and he put his hands out there, and the sergeant tapped him. When he jumped out, he hollered, Geronimo. Well, you don't do that. You don't say Geronimo. You don't say anything. You count to yourself. So when he got done, at the end, he came to the sergeant. He saluted him. He said, you're back 2 weeks. Why? He said, what's the Geronimo stuff? So they set him back 2 weeks in training.
Wow. So he wasn't with your group then?
Yeah. He left our group, yeah.
Right.
He went to a couple of barracks down. We see him sometimes in the morning. He says, Geronimo. He says, But anyway, it was good training, and I really enjoyed it. You know, the military, I don't know about you, but the military to me was, it gave me respect for people.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you, I was somewhat quiet. I didn't, you know, I never said too much. But when I got all that, I respected my fellow paratroopers, the sergeants, the rank, and I liked what I was doing. I really enjoyed it. I gave no thought to the wars or anything. Although while I was in there, the Korean War broke out. Yeah.
So you were You at this point, you've had about 36 weeks of training by the time
total, yeah, total, with the
right.
basic typing and so forth.
So about that's like about 9 months or
right.
so. Did you get to go home during this time at all?
No, I did not. I didn't make it home. Didn't get any leave of absence until I got to my unit.
Okay.
But that's when we left Fort Benning, Georgia, when we completed graduation, and what a thrill that was.
Well, what was graduation like?
It was unbelievable. A lot of guys had their families come down. I didn't.
Uh-huh.
My mom and dad were elderly people, and they didn't know how to get around. I could speak the English language that well. And my brothers weren't home. They were in the service. So there were families from all over. A lot of townspeople came in, you know. And what they had that day was a regular parachute drop. They drop equipment, and then they drop another unit, all the men would come down. And we were there. We didn't have to jump that day. We were graduating. And the colonel of our unit would come by, and he'd actually pin that pin on you. It was real exciting. Good luck, and shake your hand, and made you feel so good, you know.
How many men would you say graduated on that day?
On that day? I'll say maybe about 300. Oh, yeah. Very nice. And what was really... what you really wanted was to wear those paratrooper boots. Because there was a certain way that you would lace them.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of guys, when they had them laced with the white laces, you know, that one picture I had with my buddy's wedding.
Right.
What you do is instead of lacing them every day, you took them to town to this shoemaker, and he put a zipper on the inside. And you zip it and take off your boot. The laces were never changed. And when you put it on, you zip it up. And they look so nice and shiny because you spit shine them, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that was, and you wear them, you tuck your pants in with rubber band underneath there, you know. And I felt good. I felt like I was, I hate to say it, I felt I was better than any person in the military.
Because you were a paratrooper.
And I'll tell you a story about that one, too. Well, anyway, we get to the camp. And
but this is now
after
still...
after Fort Benning training.
Okay.
Paratrooper training.
During these 9 months. Did you write home at all?
Oh, all the time. My mother used to send me cookies and pumpkin seeds. You know, certain people are big on pumpkin seeds. My mother used to put them in her mouth. They're sunflower seeds, but we call them pumpkin seeds. And she'd get the insides out and put, and it'd be like it just opened up and get them out. I always wonder how she did that. She never taught me. And I'd break in half and eat half and half, you know. But pumpkin seeds, she'd make me Middle East pastries,
mm-hmm.
send them to me, cookies and certain stuff. And
you must have been a popular guy in your unit.
Oh, you better believe it. And I had my cousin send me stuff, you know, and I always sent pictures home to my mom and dad.
Yeah.
And we had a phone and a PX that you could use, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't, you know, as long as you didn't abuse it, you could call home. And, you know,
what did you do for entertainment? What did you do on your downtime?
All we had was a barracks, a club like by the barracks, and we go play pool, watch a little TV at the time, you know, little small TVs then. Yeah, do not like it today.
Right.
And then you read books if you want on the military, and you get together, and it was a nice evening that you
mm-hmm.
spent. You never left, very seldom you left the barracks area, because you always had your friends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or you sit outside on the steps of the barracks and talk about your town and with the guys, where you're from, New York, you know. And it was nice, camaraderie, you know,
right.
You had it. Because these are the guys you're going to be with for
right.
who knows how long and where. So I finished that,
uh-huh.
and from Fort Benning, and then we went to, at the time, was called Camp Campbell, Kentucky, which was between Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and Clarksville, Tennessee, and 60 miles from Nashville. We used to go to Nashville on the weekend, because I like country music.
Yeah.
So anyway, we went there, and we weren't shipped over to Japan because, getting back to what I told you about being a paratrooper
right.
and all that macho, the 11th Airborne was stationed in Sendai, Japan, along with the 1st Cavalry Division, you know, that big patch with the white or yellow and that. And the 1st Cavalry and 11th Airborne fought every night in taverns, beating each other up. And the government really said, the Airborne, send them back to the States. And that's why I didn't get to go over there, because the unit was scheduled to come back. And when they came back, they all came back to Camp Campbell.
Okay.
And that was our camp and over the years, and it finally changed to Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Right.
And then I got to leave, and I went home. My dad said, you want to get a car? Yeah, I bought a used car. My buddies liked that because we drove back from camp, you know. And periodically, maybe every other month, we get together and drive home. From there's only 440 miles from the camp to
right.
Chicago.
So what was the training that you got at Fort Campbell, or Camp Campbell?
At Camp Campbell, there was no training at all other than getting up in the morning and running around the airport. That was a mandatory thing. That was 3 miles. And going there, relaxing a little bit, then going to your own mess hall that you had,
right,
having your breakfast, and then you're on your own. You do what you want to do.
And how long did this last?
Well, from the time I graduated from Fort Benning, went there, until June of 1952.
So you had no other responsibilities?
None at all,
no
during
classes,
the day.
No,
well,
training?
I did. I became the company clerk at a company.
Okay.
And I was a typist. Mm-hmm. And my other brother was a typist. He handled the ordnance stuff, you know, the clothing and all that stuff. And my other friend, I don't know where he ended up. He ended up like in personnel detail to the personnel division. So eventually, I used to make the rosters up for the jump schedule, and I position all the men where they go. And I always took care of my buddies. I always put them behind me, you know, because we were always together.
Right.
No matter what. Then they had what they call a jump master school. To become a jump master, to actually get up there and get the men up and get them out the door and so forth. And that what entailed there was they take you up in a plane with a bunch of other men that want to become jump masters. Mm-hmm. You did this 3 times. And you stood in the door, and on the ground there was an arrow at the drop zone. And you'd line it up, and as soon as it hit your foot that was standing in the door there, you'd go. That told you that you're doing fine. They never gave you any lights, only when you made a mass jump with the whole group. They put the red light on, then the green light would go on, you go. But that qualified you to be a jump master by that arrow on the ground and your foot hitting it. And then you'd have to, after you open your chute, you'd have to guide it down with your risers to a circular thing, which I think was a good 100 feet in diameter. And it depended on how close you landed to the center, and it grade you.
So you basically had to show that you could aim
and land
exactly in the right spot.
And you do it 3 times. It took 3 days because there were a bunch of other guys that would have to jump after you later. They come right around the plane and drop another guy. Come right around, drop another guy. So you do it 3 times and you become a jump master. So that gives you the authority to get into plane with the men and stand in between all these men and give out the commands. Because the engines are going, you can't hear hardly anything. So you give them commands with your hands. You use your mouth to say it, but you use your hands, and they learn how to get out that plane. And I can explain it to you. They did. What you do is you get up. First thing that happens as a jump master, you look on the wall there, and the pilot gives you a red light. Sometime later, you'll get the green light because he's the one that gives you the green light to go out that door. So as a jump master, when you see that red light go on, you look at the men, you go, stand up.
And you raise your hands.
Yeah,
right.
Stand up. And you go like this, hook up. And they don't hook up on a cable.
So you're basically pantomiming the motions.
Right.
That
and they hook up. Right. And you go, check your equipment. So you check your equipment. And the man in the back, you checks your back. You check the guy in front of your back. And after you say, check your equipment, you go, sound off for equipment. And then the guy in the back would say, 10 okay, 9 okay, 8 okay. Then he would say, stand in the door, which would be the first guy.
Right.
And he'd stand in the door. And then you look up there, and when that green light goes on, you tap him in the leg. You're like a machine. They start going out the door. And you're the last one out.
Okay.
And that's being a jump master, qualified for jump master. Other than that, when I made up the things before I became a jump master, I always put myself number one man. I put my buddies 2 and 3. Because I used to ask them, Bill, you want number one? No, no. Bobby, no. You know, because you're up there a few minutes, you know.
One
and a half, 2 minutes.
Door.
And you're looking at the ground, you're going, and all of a sudden, you're looking, the jump master says, don't look at that. Green light, come on, it hits you, you go. And then you get to the ground, you take your chute, and you wrap it around you, you take it over to a truck, and you put it on there. What I have to tell you about that, back up a little bit to that Fort Benning, Georgia. You pack your first 5 chutes.
Okay.
With a partner, usually my buddy from Chicago, one of them. And you're very cautious on how you take it and shake it and lay it down and take it, shake it, lay it down. And then you fold it a certain way. And then once it gets into the backpack comes over it and you use a string to tie it up. And you go back and forth with that with rubber bands under each one.
Uh-huh.
And that gives you this.
Gives you a zigzag.
Yeah, and then you fill out the book and you put it in the back. And that's what you pack. And when you go to jump, the first 5 jumps qualifies you as a paratrooper. Out of the first 5 jumps, 1 is a night jump.
Okay.
Now that is kind of tricky. What they tell you is when you jump out of the plane, what they call the Chattahoochee River, not too far from the from our camp. And when you jump, the river has a glass. It's like ripples, and you could see it at night. But so does Asphalt Highway. And you have to be careful, because when you come over the water, which you never do, because those plane pilots are pretty good, you pull the pin out of here, turn this thing, and you hit it, and you raise your arms and come right out of the harness. You land in the water. So one guy thought he was...
So you lose your parachute.
The parachute is gone, but he'll get it naturally,
but
it's gone.
You
come right out of the chute. You come right out of the harness.
Because you don't want to be in the water with your parachute.
So that's what you... So you could just drown. You never... You know.
Right.
So one guy hit it, and he landed on the asphalt, broke two legs.
Yikes.
Then we had an incident that... at Camp Campbell, and we had an operation, well, it was a Memorial Day thing, too. So we're in the plane, I'm the number one man, my two buddies are right behind me, and a guy put the red light on the pilot, and I stood in the door after I gave all the commands, all the guys, and all of a sudden, the green light went on, and I said, bang, hit my leg, and we all start coming out. You hear the roar of the engines, and all of a sudden, the chute opens up, and it's like nothing. Quiet. So anyway, I looked down. Guess where we're at? All of us. Over the camp. He gave us the green light too early. I got it marked on my sheet. Hospital jump. So I landed in a ball field. Some guys landed on top of churches with the steeple on the side. They landed in the guys were landing on pavements and parking lots, but nobody really got hurt. I hurt my knee. And over the years, I ended up with knee surgery to replace them. But they came with a Jeep, put me on a Jeep, lay me out on the back, you know, with the stretcher, took me to the hospital, which wasn't too far away. I got treatment, and they put me just to bruise it quite a bit, you know.
Right.
Put me back on a Jeep, took me back to the camp. I was off for about a month, you know, our little rehab. But that was a scary day. I couldn't believe it. When I looked down, I saw the camp. You know, you look down, normally you see the field, all of the field. So I guess they got on the pilot's case up there. They gave us the light too early. That's
right.
What he did. That's what he did.
So the whole unit ended up...
The whole unit. I don't know how many other planes were involved, but I know our whole plane was loaded.
And this was day or night?
Daytime.
Daytime. Okay.
And I only made one night jump, like I say. It was kind of scary, but we had a full moon, and your eyes get acclimated to night, you know, darkness.
Right.
And you could see guys landing down below. And you have to be careful, because the way the wind blows you, sometimes it blows you like this, and you're ready to do what they call a PLF, a parachute landing fall. And you come this way, and you start going to make that fall, and all of a sudden it's not there. You come this way.
Because you're swaying with the
right.
parachute, with the breeze,
and there's
right?
some days, a lot of days you can, and I've done a couple of them, where they call them staff days, where you can come down and actually just go down a little bit and stand right up, because there's no wind or nothing. But the training at Fort Benning, I keep backing up because I'm reminded of it.
That's okay.
They had towers like Riverview Park. If you know Riverview Park,
right.
The parachute, 250 feet in the air. Three of them were release towers, and one was strictly, they hook you up. You go up there, and he stops you, and he lets you go, and you drop about 2 feet. And then you harness, you get the shock, and you come down straight on cables. The other ones, the chute is opened up and clipped down to a big ring, average chute. They take you up. And he stops you about 6 inches or 7 inches from the top. And he's in a chair with a microphone. You can hear him. And he says, soldier, upon release, grab your left two risers. There's four risers, two in the front, two in the back. Grab your left risers because there's cold steel. Because of the windy day, you know. So he goes up, and all of a sudden, the ring stays up there, but the chute is inflated, and you're coming down. So you grab your left two, you pull them, and the chute actually tilts, and you go. Or forward, and you go to get away from that tower. He
right.
tells you.
So you have really quite a bit of control as you're coming
Oh,
down.
Absolutely. You can do so much with that parachute. You can land 150 feet or 100 yards over there if you wanted to. All you do is pull those risers, then the chute tilts, and away you go. Or backwards, go back, or forward. But this time, well, they always tell you, pull your left two, or your right two, or your back two. You got cold steel behind you. And you do that. Otherwise, you're going to be in a tower.
Right.
And when you come down, you do your landing, you take your harness off, another guy from the parachute packing company will take your chute, and you run up to the sergeant, salute him, and gives you a grade.
And how are you supposed to land?
Well, when you land, you got your legs together, and you keep them, don't look at the ground because that ground comes up fast, faster than you think. You look at the horizon, and all of a sudden you can see, and you just go down and do a landing.
So you land on your feet?
You land on your feet, and then you bend your knees,
uh-huh.
and you come on your side here, right
and
side or left work. Side.
Yeah.
It's called a PLF.
How quickly
yeah.
would you think you're descending at that point? Rapidly?
No, you're doing 120 feet per second. That's not too bad. Gotcha. Without a parachute, you're talking 20 seconds. With the parachute, 120. You're really flying down. But, you know, it's so quiet, and you could talk to your friends. Hey, you know, what's new? Hey,
you know. So you could talk to your two buddies
yeah,
while you were all
if they're back
down.
Of me or nearby me, because it's right there, right behind you, you know. But it was interesting. Then we used to bring cameras with us, take pictures. They got a couple of pictures of us on a drop zone.
Right.
Take pictures of us, and it was nice. And it wasn't the money, but in order to you qualify every 3 months, you have to jump. Sometimes you have to jump because they have a show to put on. You got to jump. But you get $50 a month extra. That's what they gave us. $50 more to be a paratrooper, but you must qualify every 3 months.
Which was rather substantial.
Yeah, big money.
Regular pay.
Oh, yeah. And there were times where you ran out of money,
mm-hmm.
and there was always a guy or two that would say, listen, I'm going to give you five for seven. So he gives you $5 and payday. He's sitting on a railing waiting for you to come out of the room with your money because he paid
seven.
Cash.
Yeah.
Come and give you cash. Oh, here you go. Seven, Ray. Oh, here you go. He had a business. And nobody complained about it. He wasn't ripping us off, and he wasn't doing anything criminal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice. What they do in the service, and they did it to us, if you're kind of a guy that doesn't get along with anybody, what they do is they short sheet you. And that they take your sheet, and they bring it back and make it real short. When you go to put your feet in, you can't get them in. We had a guy, he used to snore every night. So went to the kitchen and got a hot dog. And put a hot dog as like a cigar, and we sprayed whipped cream all around, and we woke him up. He'd jump. But, you know, down south in our barracks, you know, when the lights are on, they had these big June bugs. And they used to bzzz, they go all over. They'd be flying around. And we go by the light, and when you get about five or six, even 10 of them in there, you shut the lights off, all of a sudden, they hit the lockers and they kill themselves because they can't see in the dark. But, I mean, it was crazy, but you did things like that, you know.
So besides June bugs, what did you do for entertainment?
Entertainment, we had a show, a theater on the post called Ernie Pyle Theater.
Okay.
And it was dedicated to him. And we go to show, or we get in my car, and we go to town. We go to Clarksville, Tennessee, which was strictly beer. If you want hard liquor, you go to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which was the same distance from the camp. But we go to town, and we'd shop around, do things. And on a weekend, we get together, about six, seven of us in my car. We all go down to Nashville to the Grand Ole Opry. Boy, it was fantastic. I love that music. Guys like Roy Acuff and they'd sing, and they loved the GIs. Well, we supported them money-wise,
right.
You know. And in town in Clarksville, and it's another thing I never realized, the guy said, you want your shoes shine, your boots shine while I'm getting a haircut? I said, yeah. Said, just a minute. Goes in, comes back with a little black boy. Shine my shoes. I went to give him money, and he said, no, you give it to me. So I gave him $2. I don't know if he gave it to the boy. I don't know what he did with it. And I never thought, I couldn't believe that. As well as,
right.
You know, Norfolk,
right.
Virginia.
Right.
I couldn't figure that out. I come home, told my dad, he says, well, maybe Raymond, that's why they're all coming this way.
Yeah.
He said, it's a shame how they treat them down there. And I really felt sorry for him. I really did.
Yeah.
I really did. So why do I treat those people like that? But anyway, one night I was leaving, Clarksville. Because I went to Austin Peay State College on my night, at nights. I go there for a couple of...
So you were going to school?
Yeah,
while you
I took school. I ended up taking about a year. Just, you know, English 101, Science 101. And I used to drive into town. And the one night I came there, and just got out of town, and a car was at a light, and I pulled up next to him. The light changed, and I went... all of a sudden, I see this gumball machine. I pull over. Policeman from Clarksville, Tennessee. Where you going, boy? I said, I'm going to the camp. Let me see your ID. Where you coming from? I said, Austin Peay State College, right over there by the light. You know, you can't pass on the right light there. That's illegal. I said, what do we do? He said, come on in the station. And I think the cash bond was like $20. I paid it, never heard anything about it because that was it. It was right. A fine. Lo and behold, that thing haunted me a little bit when I got on the police department. I was called into the room by the interviewing sergeant. He said, paratrooper, huh? I said, yeah, sergeant. Okay, what high school did you go to? You got any college? It's about almost 2 years. Okay, he said, what about that rape charge in Clarksville, Tennessee? I said, rape charge? And it dawned on me. It's, wait a minute, that was a traffic violation. He said, I just want to see what your reaction's going to be. Why didn't you put it on your application? It asked for, have you ever been arrested before? And I said, I didn't think that was an arrest. I thought, you know.
Right.
But the way he put it to me, I just got scared.
Yeah.
And I said, am I all right? He's going, get out of here. All right.
Yeah.
Scared me.
Yeah. So you were in Fort Campbell for how long?
Until June of 1952. What happened was I was supposed to get out in July.
Mm-hmm.
I should say July of 52. I was supposed to get out in July of 51. And I had a month more to go. And I was detailed for the personnel section. I was in charge of discharges,
mm-hmm.
processing them. And all of a sudden, I got one of what they call a Twix. It's like a teletype or email, whatever they are. Teletype. And on it says, all personnel scheduled to be discharged for the year of 1951 are hereby extended by the 82nd Congress. That was Harry Truman.
Right.
So I had to spend another year. So I ended up basically with 3 years, 11 months, and 2 days.
How did you feel when you got the extension?
I felt bad about it. I said, what is it? What? I was planning, I told my mom, I'm coming home, honey. Oh, we'll get a party for you, Raymond, and everybody will be here. And just about a month or so before, you know. And even my buddies, what did we do here? Why?
So when
but we went back to the camp. We went back to our unit.
Right. And what did you do for that extra year?
Bivouacs, things, nothing. Made my jumps, which will qualify.
Explain to us about bivouacs.
Bivouac, that was another story. We got a weekend pass from the sergeant. His name was Evans. What a nice guy. He used to say to us, if you guys get me out on the sand, you'll kill me. He said, but if I get you in the grass, I can kill all of you. You know, the way he said it. But he was from some southern
mm-hmm.
state, I don't know. Anyway, he's you Chicago boys, you always be on our case, but I think he liked us because we used to tell him stories. His name was Sergeant Evans. And he said, Sarge, we want to go home this weekend. Well, we got a bivouac Monday morning, and you know you're going to be about 5 miles out of the range. We're only allowed 400 and some miles radius.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going 450, a few more miles. He said, you promise to be back Monday morning, 4 o'clock. We're going out to the bivouac. We're going to march out there. Okay. So we come home, and we got all messed up. We couldn't get my car. I had a problem with it on the highway coming back. We didn't get back until 7 o'clock that Monday morning. Walk in the office there, the CO's office, and there's one old young kid there. He said, oh, you guys are in trouble. The camp was empty. Our barracks, they're all gone.
Right.
So our packs were in the office already made up. We put them on, and he said, I'll take you in the Jeep, but I'm going to only take you a little bit. You have to walk a little, because if you see me, I'm in trouble. So what he did was he took that canister with the water in it, and he wetted us all down like we walked. And we get into the camp, and here's the sergeant. He goes to this. And we were sergeants, too, you know, but he was, three up, three down, and a diamond. He said, you boys just messed up. You know, I can court-martial you. I said, Sarge, don't do it. He said, all right, get over there. He said, you're going to do KP for all the time we're out here, which was 6 days. I never forget that. He had us.
Yeah.
But we tried to lie and got wet, you know. But that was fun. It was fun. He was very nice about it.
So yeah. What did you do on the bivouac once you got there?
Well, you got there. You just sit down, relax, and then you go out and you dig little trenches with your shovel and sure, you know, for combat stuff. And that's about all. And sit down and talk at night by the fire. And
it's preparation for if you end up.
You took all your equipment, all your canisters, your clothes, you took everything. Like you're really going into combat. You know, that's...
So you said you had KP. What sort of things did you eat while you were in bivouac?
Canned food. All canned food. And they had some good stuff. Believe me. Some guys, give me that. You know.
What kind of stuff?
Well, like peas and ham mixed with the peas.
Mm-hmm.
We had some kind of a thing. It was like a pot roast. It had carrots in it, mushrooms, And all you did was take it off and put it on this little thermo, whatever they call them.
Uh-huh.
And you cook it on there. You put it in your metal container and cook it. It was good. The food was good. And they gave you sweets. Well, God knows how long they were prepared, but they were good. There was nothing old for you. And then what they did was they had a guy come in there and he brought some pop in for the troops, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All Coca-Cola at the time, I remember.
Right.
And we got that. And cigarettes were free if you smoked. Oh, what else? But we had a nice time. It was like a get-together. But you did do things during the day. You did go out there and hide in bushes, come out with your rifles and make, you know.
So you had exercises during the day.
Yes, we did.
To practice combat skills.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And then in the evening, you were pretty free to do what you wanted?
Well, at night, sure, no problem.
Did you have any night exercises?
No, not at all.
None at all?
No night life. No, none at all. But it was, I enjoyed that. It was fun. It was fun. When I look back at it, it was fun. And, you know, when I got discharged, I was like down. I just thought, I have my whole life is, you know, so, what am I getting into?
So you finished your time at Fort Campbell.
Campbell, and we drove
Camp
home.
Campbell.
All three of us went together.
And that's when, were you discharged there?
Discharged there at Fort Campbell.
Okay, so you said when you were discharged, you were a little bit.
Yeah, I was down. When we got in the car, and you know, and you get to the gate, my buddies would say, "Man, I'll let guy to go jump at the gate, the MP. And I said, "Come on." We got up there, and he said, "How you doing, guys?" And he's got your passes. We're finished. Hold up the discharge paper. He said, "Have a good time." But it's Highway 41. But on the way home, it was kind of quiet. And I said, "Well, you know, it's like we're not going to go back there."
Right.
And I felt kind of bad. And then we start talking amongst ourselves, what's it going to be like when we get home?
And what was it like when you got home?
Oh, naturally, you come home, your mom, dad embrace you. My brothers were home then. They just got home before me, a year before me. And my one brother was on the SS New Jersey. He got shot up a little bit on a battleship, but he got all right. He got the medical discharge. But anyway, he come home, and what are you going to do, this and that? And my dad says, "Well, what are you going to do now?" And I go, "Oh, I just got home. You know, he wanted to put me on a job." So anyway, a couple of days or a week go by, and we get together, the three of us, at a local place. We all, you know, before we went to the service. "What are you going to do?" "We're going to meet Monday morning, and we're going to go out look for a job." So we go to this area where it's all industrial commercial buildings, and there was one big building or factory, and it was summertime, and the windows were open on the basement level, and you hear these machines going. And my buddy looked at me and says, "I'm not going in there. I'm not going to work there." So I don't know, let it go another week or two. And my dad got up one morning and said, "What are you going to do? You're not going to take it easy. Get your clothes on, wear old pants, put on some old shoes, get in a car." He was a bricklayer, my dad, and a good bricklayer, a good stonemason. So my dad gets me in the car. We go to a construction site, and the boss, one of the bosses is there, and he said, "Come here." He says, "Sam," he says, "what is he?" He says, "My son. I want him to be an apprentice." "Whatever you want, Bob. Whatever you want. He's a good boy." So I learned to be a bricklayer. I went to, you know, masonry school for 2 years, and I became a journeyman. I got my card, and I used to have a foreman on a job. His name was Zimmerman, and he always used to come after me for some reason or not, I don't know. And he said to me one day after I got my card, union card, next day on a job, it was on a Wednesday, Thursday morning, he said, "I want you to get up and brick up those beams, those I-beams up there." I said, "I'm not going to do it." "Why not?" "I'm a journeyman. That's an apprentice job." So he wouldn't do it. So my dad said, "What's the matter?" I said, "He's sending me up there." "No, no." He said, "Come here. Come here, Zimmerman. You don't do that to my son. You get an apprentice." So I happened to be an apprentice on a job. He said, "You get up there." "Okay."
Yeah.
He went up there. I didn't do it. So I worked for him for about, about 5 years. I always worked with my dad. In fact, we used to buy gloves together. He was right-handed. I was left-handed. And the hand I used, the right hand, was for to pick up the brick, not the left hand for the trowel. And buy about 3-4 dozen of them, you know, split them up. And I was still home. I wasn't married at the time. So anyway, I go with them every morning, and I take them to the job. We have lunch. My mother make us, you know, lunch boxes and all that. And then one day, a foreman got kind of nasty with my dad. And my dad said, "That's it. Come on, Raymond. Get the tools. Put them in the car. Go home." Soon we got home, the phone call was there. It was one of the owner's sons. And he said, "When I heard you left the job, it was like a streetcar running over my body." Very dramatic. So that didn't last. It was about 5 years. And then I got tired of taking the lime and sand and cement home. And I said, I got to do something. So I took the police department exam. And out of 4,500 applicants, I ended up about 385. And then with my veterans points, I jumped up into the 200 area. And I got the call. The second call, I was about the second or third guy to get called. And that was in 1957, October of 57. And I left the police department in May of 1993. I put in 36 years. Okay. On a car, on a motorcycle, little plainclothes work. And then I ended up on the Michigan Avenue in Chicago and had a corner, directing traffic. And that was my career in the police department.
Okay.
And I never had any bad instances on the job. I like what I did. And I did have a couple of funny instances where I was on a corner and a guy made an improper turn, a cab driver. And he gets out of the cab and he's looking at me and he's an Arabic guy. You're killing me. You're killing me. I said, I'm not killing you. And he got on his knees. He's praying. Please, please. And this is 8 o'clock in the morning, rush hour traffic on Michigan Avenue, downtown Chicago. I said, get up and get out of here. Then another time, another cab driver pulled around in the wrong lane. I said, pull over there. Lipstick on, rouge, earrings. I said, give me your license, ma'am. And I look at the license. I look at the guy. I said, wait a minute. Are you for real? It was a transvestite. I had fun with this guy. I said, what's with the earrings? Where'd you get them at, Marshall Field? No, I. But anyway, I had fun with this guy. He was really, and I said, do me a favor. He said, what do you want? I said, take the lipstick off, the rouge. Be like a guy. Oh, okay, whatever you say. And a couple months later, beep, beep, hi. And he had it all off. And, but I had fun. And I met some very, very nice people. You know, Pritzker family. Abra Anderson, who was the goddaughter of, what's his name, New York, Rockefeller, mm-hmm. His granddaughter. I met a lot of, the tennis player, that girl, what's her name? She played tennis.
Serena Williams?
No, this was an elderly woman. She played, the guy always said he
Billie
could.
Oh, Billie Jean King.
Yeah, and I used to, she walked down the street and I see her, love 14. But I had a nice time on the police department. I enjoyed what I did. I met a lot of nice people.
Did you take advantage of any of the GI benefits, like the GI Bill or anything?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And then of most recent, somebody told me, why don't you go into your veteran medication, prescription? I said, I'm doing all right with my insurance. I'm not going to. I never took advantage of none of it. My cousin did because he was in artillery unit and he lost his hearing. Mm-hmm. And he went to Heinz Hospital and he had couldn't find any record of him. They found he was overseas. But they give them both hearing aids, about $3,000 each. You know?
Right. You're still in touch with those two friends?
Oh, my two buddies, yeah, boy. They have kids. They're married and gone, you know. And I only had one son, and he's still single. I lost my wife in May of 2005, lung cancer. She never smoked. I lost her in 2005, and my wife was Greek. So we went to a Greek Orthodox church. And my son was an altar boy, and he's just turned 40. Mm-hmm. He works for Chicago Title. He just got a promotion. He's a good boy.
Do you belong to any veterans organizations?
No, I do. I bought to did what they call the Ev Zones. It's part of a Greek organization out of the church.
Okay.
They call them Ev Zones, and they meet like once every 6 months. And then when somebody dies, it's a member of the Ev Zones. They come to church and they pray for them, and then they play the taps outside. That's about it.
It sounds like you enjoyed your time in the military, yeah. And when you were out, you enjoyed that part of your life, but everything.
Right. I also belong to my 11th Airborne Association.
Okay.
And I get stuff every month from magazines and things about different stuff. Do you want to buy T-shirts and things, you know? And but I enjoyed my service. But like I say, I was kind of down when I got out. I said to myself, you know, because you didn't have those guys around you. And when nighttime came, I said to myself, normally we'd be outside with the guys, you know. And
right.
A couple of times I called my buddies up. I said, how you doing? What are you doing? He said, nothing. I said, let me ask you something, Bill. Are you down a little bit? He said, yeah, why? I said, so am I. So we decided to get together next night and sort of build up our spirits a little bit, you know, that this wasn't the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we were somewhat fortunate. We didn't get... They took 10 guys when the Korean War broke out. They took 10 of my men, other guys from my ordnance company. But they didn't touch us because we were scheduled to get out, which subsequently turned into another year. So they took, an infantry division, the 527, the 511 Sigma. They took a lot of units that went over there, you know. And they lost a lot of GIs during that Korean War. A lot of them. But that's about it, unless there's some more you want to...
Okay. How did your experience in the military affect the way you think about the military and about life in general?
Oh, I would recommend the military to every kid, that even if he gets out of high school, or even if he doesn't finish high school, go into the service. It'll teach you so much. I learned a lot. I learned self-confidence. I respected my elders, the people, the bosses, captains, lieutenants, majors, whatever they were. And you came out with that attitude. And I came home, and I used to grab my mom and hug her and kiss her and say, what's the matter with you? But my mom. And I had all the respect in the world for my parents. And I don't think I had that when I went in because I was young.
Right.
I always thought I was always going to have my mom, always going to have my dad, you know. And I never went to him for anything. But when I got home, I went to him for the love, you know, that I didn't have all that time in the service. But I would definitely recommend, that, you know, whether it's a war on or not, go in there. It's the best thing for a boy. Not so much women. I would say no for girls. But for boys, definitely. You learn to respect each other. You got the camaraderie with your friends, which you probably wouldn't have if you were home. What would you be doing? Sitting on a corner drinking beer, doing drugs, chasing women. You know, it's a different ball game. You learn so much.
So it helps you grow up.
That's the way I grew up. My brothers the same way. They always said, good thing we went into service. But they always said, you paratroopers were nothing. Because he was Air Force and I had Navy. But they were my brothers, you know.
Right.
I liked the service. And when time came to re-up, I had a lieutenant would say to me, Ray, if you re-up for 3 more years, I'll make sure you get the warrant officer. I said, I just want to go home, you know. I was at that point when I wanted to go home. But then once I started going home, I said, what about my buddies back there, you know.
Right.
It's different. I get guys that send me emails with my unit. Mm-hmm. They belong to 11th Airborne, and they got a list of all the guys in 11th Airborne with their emails. I get one once a while, you know, mm-hmm. email. I remember there was a guy, his name was, I think it was not Macy. He was from New York. He was one of those roller derby guys. And I guess he's doing something at camp, and he got injured his leg. I said, what are you going to do with that, Al? He says, I'll be going home. What are you going to do? Roller skate. That's what he did. He went home. Got a medical discharge.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to add?
No, not really. I'm just thinking. Good times. I'll be honest with you. I did not have a bad time in the service.
Right.
I did not. It was either good and better, you know. And sometimes you get a, you know, pass to go home. And you say, so what am I going home for? I'm meeting all my buddies, you know. That was the difference.
Right.
That was the difference. Same with the police department. I left all my buddies.
Right.
The guys I work with, my locker partners, everything, you know.
So the friendships were very important to you.
Very much so. You know, and one thing, though, I can't understand, my two brothers never talked about their experience.
Right.
In the Air Force or the Navy. Of course, my older brother got injured, but he never talked about it. But even my older brother, he never said, I did this in the Air Force, I did that. He never talked about it. Never. I used to take my sister when she was little. When I came out, found out she was four or five years old then, when I came out. And I took her and went to Riverview Park, and I went on a parachute. And I got scared. You know, they just put that belt across you. And then when you're in a parachute, you got that harness on, you're tightened up, you got... You know, you're protected more. I took her up there, and I told the guy, let us down. And he let us come down right away because I was afraid. Didn't have that feeling.
That security.
Because the thing was going like this. I said, you know, you're 250 feet in the air. But if you need any more, just let me know. I can't think of anything.
All right. Well, in that case, thank you very much for sharing your story.
I enjoyed it. Believe me.